If you have a Bible this morning, I invite you to open up to the book of Ecclesiastes, kicking off a new series today. If you have a Bible, if you want to find Ecclesiastes, it's in the Old Testament, so the best way is to kind of open your Bible up to the middle. You'll probably land around Psalms and go to the right, and so you'll find Psalms, Proverbs, and then after Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. And if you don't have a Bible, we'll put the words on the screen and you'll be able to follow along that way. But King Solomon is the author of Ecclesiastes. And the scriptures describe Solomon as the wisest man who ever lived. And what we find here in Ecclesiastes is Solomon kind of musing, wrestling with these ideas of the meaning of life. Because Solomon was unique, where he had all the money in the world that he could want. He had all the fame, he had all the smarts, all the knowledge, he had all the women that he could want. And yet, he still finds himself wondering and searching for what's life all about? Trying to find some significance and some meaning in this life. And while wrestling through that, he wrote this rather famous passage of scripture in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, starting with verse 1. He writes, "There is a time for everything, a season for every activity under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent, and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. Turn, turn, turn." The birds, you know, they'll echo in your head, or Forrest Gump, images of Forrest Gump keep flashing back in your mind. But images here, Solomon finds himself explaining the paradox of life. And he's saying, okay, this is what reality looks like. That reality, as much as we would want to pretend it to at times, doesn't sit on just one side of this tension. That no one only experiences love. That eventually betrayal creeps its way in. Or hate creeps its way in. That no one only laughs, because at some point, the tears just come. You know, and no one only just dances, because there comes a time when we have to mourn. But however, sometimes people, especially some followers of Jesus, they can feel this sense of pressure and guilt that maybe they should be happy all the time. That if they really loved God or they really trusted God, that there would never be any reason to mourn. But that's not reality. That's not biblical. It doesn't even line up with what we see in God himself. Otherwise, we would never find verses like we do in John, where Jesus' friend Lazarus passes away. And in John 11, verse 35, it says simply, "Jesus wept." Now, just get that for a moment. God in the flesh wept. He mourned. He cried. And so what we find here in Ecclesiastes is Solomon acknowledging what reality looks like. That this tension, this seemingly contradiction or paradox of experiences from one moment to the next, and what that looks like in reality. But then he lays that out, and then he continues with this in verse 9. He says, "What does the worker gain from his toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on men." So Solomon writes, he goes, you know, after observing this, this is how life is. This is what reality looks like. I've seen this burden that God has laid on men, that life is complex. It's paradoxical. It's complicated. Life feels confusing at times, when one moment everything seems great and the next moment it feels like everything's falling apart. And that tension is a difficult tension to live in. And it can be a tremendous weight to carry. And when faced with that reality, some people, rather than embrace the tension and rather than embrace the paradox and this complexity of life, some people end up trying to live on only one side of the tension. Sometimes, as I just mentioned, you know, you find yourself with people that refuse to acknowledge any hurt, any sorrow, any pain, because somehow it would seem to them like a lack of faith if you did. Somehow you lack faith if you acknowledge that something actually hurts. But more often than that, what I tend to see is people who camp out on the other side of that tension, where all they tend to see is tragedy. All they tend to see is hurt, that everything gets filtered through wounding, that everything gets filtered through a sense of disappointment. And some of you who've kind of fallen to that camp, some of you justify yourselves by calling yourself a realist. Your spouse calls you grumpy, but you call yourself kind of a realist. But reality, as Solomon explains, embraces the tension. It's one who acknowledges both sides of the tension, not cynically only acknowledging what has and what might go wrong. But frankly, it's just easier to do that. It's easier to live on the negative side of the tension, to see the world through that lens, because it's easier on our own hearts to only expect tragedy, to only expect disappointment. It's the way we find ourselves kind of in this self-protection mode of trying to protect our own hearts, that we think if we expect the worst, then we can, you know, pretend we can't be disappointed. But it's a struggle to actually choose to dance. We have to fight many times to choose to love, to choose to laugh, to choose to build. And so understand, this reality that God invites us to live in is a reality that acknowledges both, that recognizes the complexity and the paradox of life experiences. But what we can't fail to miss is how Solomon concludes his poetic commentary on the world that we live in. Look at what he writes in verse 11. Solomon writes, God has made everything beautiful in its time. God has made everything, not just some things, not just a few things, not just most things. God has made everything, all things beautiful in its time. And this is the story that God invites us to step into. This is the story that God invites us to participate in, a story that pursues what is beautiful. Not in a sing-song, flippant kind of way, but a story that partners with God in redeeming all that's been broken and stained, in resurrecting what's been neglected and thrown away. That's the story that God invites us to partner with him in. A story that acknowledges the tragedy that sin has caused, the loneliness and hurt and apathy caused by things like greed and selfishness, where you acknowledge that. You don't dismiss it. You don't pretend like it doesn't exist. But more importantly, lives with the hope that God can and God will bring beauty out of it all. And it's time. And if you look around here at Crosspoint, all of us, and we have been from the beginning, collectively are a declaration of that very reality. That our lives and our collective gathering together and pursuing life with one another and pursuing this journey is a declaration that God can take all the fractured, broken pieces of our lives and somehow bring them together to make something beautiful. But before that become the reality that we experience, not only in our day-to-day lives, and not only claim it as our own, and not only as the story that we then try to courageously go and live out, we have to actually be able to recognize beauty. We have to be able to see it for ourselves. Dallas Willard is probably one of my favorite authors, and I was listening to an interview that he gave a while back, and he was asked the question that, what are some of the core disciplines that you would teach someone who's just beginning to follow Jesus? And one of the things that Dallas Willard said was, he goes, that you need to teach them how to experience beauty. You need to teach them how to experience beauty. Now, if someone wants to talk about spiritual disciplines or things that you should put into your life, habits that you should put into your life, as you're drawing closer to God and just beginning to understand God and what it means to walk with him, I don't think many of us would put, you know, near the top of the list, that, you know what, you need to teach them how to experience beauty. But it's so critical, because for many of us, so often, life can feel like beauty just gets sucked out of the life that we're living. It feels like all the color just gets removed and taken out of our life, and we find ourselves only being able to see these different shades of gray, where all you find yourself seeing is disappointment, and it feels like you're starting to drown, and life just seems rather pointless or rather meaningless. And when you find yourself in moments like that, and for some of us, when we find ourselves in seasons like that, or for others of us, we find ourselves at times in years like that, we have to be willing to put some disciplines in our life to help us experience beauty, because it's core to our understanding of God, and it's core to us understanding what it means to journey with God. And so this morning, what I want to do is I want to suggest to you a few things, a few disciplines, a few habits to try to put into your life to help you experience beauty. And this is by no means a comprehensive list, but I hope that if you find yourself a person who longs for more beauty in their life, who looks at their world and sees where, man, I just feel like there's a lot of gray, or there's a lot of disappointment, and it's tough to find beauty in certain moments, that these can be a place to help you start, and a catalyst in experiencing and pursuing the beauty and the story that God invites us into. So first thing would be this, is that you would discipline yourself to simply pause and look around. You would discipline yourself to pause and look around. There is so much beauty that is happening all around us, but it becomes very easy to become blind to it. The scriptures say that all of creation declares the glory of God. All creation declares the goodness, the beauty of God. And so, let me ask you just a couple questions. When was the last time that you paused for 30 minutes just to watch the sunset? Or when was the last time that you got up early enough just to watch the sunrise? Or when was the last time that you put yourself in front of the ocean just so that you could hear and listen to the waves crash against the rocks? Or when was the last time that you paused in the middle of a walk or passing through a garden just to study a flower? Or just to take 20 minutes and walk through the woods? Or when was the last time that you stopped just to longingly stare at an infant or to look at your own child and to just simply let yourself be in awe and the wonderment of it all? Again, there's so much beauty happening all around us, but it's so easy. It's so easy for us to become blind to it. And we start to lie to ourselves after a while, and we try to convince ourselves of things that are actually counterfeit. We convince ourselves that that is what is actually beautiful and our standard for beauty. We find ourselves in a culture where marketers alter and put on TV and magazine covers certain images and certain people, and they hold them up as this standard of beauty that others should somehow impossibly try to attain to. And we let people trying to make money off of our willingness to lie to ourselves tell us what's beautiful, rather than pausing long enough to notice beauty happening all around us. That we let ourselves be convinced of a lie that beauty always comes with this price tag. Steve and I were at Subway the other day, and there's a new one that opened up just around the corner here in Cary Park, and we were sitting there, and there was a much older married couple that sat down next to us, and the couple was severely overweight. But as they sat down in this booth next to us, and we glanced over, they were sitting there, and each of them were eating kind of this 6-inch sub sandwich and had this, you know, just glass of water. And they were sitting there just gently talking to one another and, just quiet. But as I stopped and just kind of looked at them for a moment, it became this incredibly inspiring, beautiful moment. In the midst of a lot of other things that were going on that day, in the midst of a lot of other difficulties happening, where it would have been so easy to just think, you know what, yeah, here's another overweight couple sitting next to us in the booth, but rather these were two people that were fighting. Not fighting with each other, but fighting for each other. And fighting for their health. And it was this moment to have to just pause and recognize the beauty and the sacredness of the moment happening right in front of us. And every day, there's moments like that happening all around if we would just pause long enough to take notice. It's a second discipline that I'd encourage you to embrace, and that is that you would share stories of when you see something beautiful happen. That you would take time to share stories of when you see something beautiful happen. I think for many of us, it's much easier to vent and to complain and share the negative of what happened during the week or during the day at work or at home with the kids or at school. And understand, we all need someone and places to vent. But when the ratio of venting and sharing frustrations and disappointments constantly outnumbers the things we find ourselves celebrating and sharing that are beautiful, what we're doing is we're conditioning our own hearts and the hearts of the people that we influence to focus more on tragedies and disappointments of life rather than pursuing the beautiful things that God is up to and inviting us to be a part of in the midst of those tragedies. And all you have to do is look at a newspaper. All you have to do is look at a magazine or go to CNN.com, and you will understand that we as a people, as a culture, gravitate toward scandal. We gravitate toward darkness. We gravitate toward things like gossip. And we have to be intentional, and we have to fight to put disciplines and habits in our life that will shape our hearts and condition our hearts toward the beautiful, toward the potential, toward hope. So you've got to find a way. You've got to find a way to discipline yourself, to put these habits in your life so that you will share stories of when you see something beautiful happen. Otherwise, it just continues to pass through this filter, this gravitational pull that we have toward all that's negative, toward all that's dark. The third thing I challenge you with, as simple as it may sound, is that you have to be willing to ask for help. That you have to be willing to ask for help. You ever been to an art gallery and find yourself thinking that you should know which pieces are really good, but you just don't, you know? A couple months ago, I was in Los Angeles for a day, and a friend wanted to take me and a couple people that I was with to the Getty Museum. I don't know if you've seen the Getty before or heard about the Getty, but the Getty Museum was just flat out gorgeous. It sits on this hillside that overlooks the entire city of Los Angeles and just tucked in these trees and in this wood, and it's just inspirational alone just to look at the architecture and the setting of this building. But once inside, there were these moments where I would get this unsettled type of feeling where I'd be walking around and looking at different pieces of art, and I'd run into a group of people who would be standing and studying and staring at a particular piece of art, and they would be admiring its beauty, and I'd have this feeling like everyone obviously knows something that I don't, you know? And I think I'm the only one who just doesn't get it, you know? Everyone else around here must get it, but I don't get it, because I'm looking at some of these pieces of art, and it looks like something my six-year-old could conjure up, you know, and slap on the fridge, but no one's asking him to hang, you know, the refrigerator paintings in the Getty, or they're not selling it for seven figures, though that would be nice if they, you know, wanted to, but then the Getty, you know, thankfully had these great cards that you could get that were next to the piece of art, and they would explain the history and some of the context of the painting, and it would help you gain a much more informed perspective of what the artist was actually trying to do. Or at times, one of the museum curators would stop by and they would explain something more and offer a perspective that allowed you to start to notice certain nuances in the piece that that once you understood those nuances, it allowed you to begin to see some of the beauty in it. It allowed you to begin to find some of the value in it. Now, most of the time, I understand, it didn't mean that I suddenly completely flipped and thought this thing that first looked like my six-year-old could do it was now the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen, and I've got to figure out a way to have this in my home. I didn't get there, but as I got a broader perspective, I was able to start to find glimpses of beauty in it, to start to understand why it was valued so much. And you see, so often, what we need most in those moments, when we can't see any beauty, when we can't see any potential for beauty, when we can't find ourselves with any hope, what we need is another perspective, a more informed perspective. In Mark chapter 14 in the New Testament, there's a story with Jesus, and he starts in verse 3 this way. It says, while Jesus was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of a man known as Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar, a very expensive perfume, made of pure nard, and she broke the jar, and she poured the perfume on his head. Verse 4, some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor. And they rebuked her harshly. Verse 6, leave her alone, said Jesus. Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me. She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. You see, what someone and others saw as a waste, from Jesus' point of view, was a beautiful thing. This beautiful expression of her heart and her love and her willingness to sacrifice something incredibly valuable to her. Jesus saw more than the other people did. He had a much broader perspective than the immediate that others saw. And so when you find yourself struggling to find beauty, it would make sense. It would make sense that we would start by just asking God for help. Asking God to help us see things that we cannot see on our own. And so maybe it sounds something like, God, I don't know how. I don't have a clue how, but here I am with my junk and my past and my failures. And God, I don't know how, but here's this situation. Here's this tragedy I'm experiencing, or this tragedy that I see going on around me. And the scriptures say that you make all things beautiful, that you make everything beautiful, including me, including my junk, including my failures, including what's going on here. You make all things beautiful. So I'm trusting myself to you. And I'm trusting the situation to you. And God, would you show me how I can partner with you in the resurrection story you're up to? God, would you show me what it looks like to partner with you in bringing beauty out of this? Because God, I want to live on the side of pursuing beauty, pursuing hope. And that you would ask God what it looks like for you to partner with him, and then you'd listen. You'd listen. And you need to understand, many times partnering with God isn't some huge, extravagant leap of faith. That partnering with God and the resurrection that he wants to do in the world many times can be as simple as simply obeying something that he's already told you. Something maybe he's already told you in the scriptures, or something that he's already whispered to you or spoken to you. Maybe partnering with God for you just means listening to someone, to pause long enough to listen. Maybe it's you taking some sort of action. Maybe partnering for you looks like that you need, there's something that you need to confess. Maybe it's giving. Maybe it's trusting. Maybe for you, partnering with the resurrection that God wants to do in the world means you going, or maybe it means you staying. Maybe it means you encouraging. Maybe it means shining light on what's dark, or maybe it's doing the right thing and being willing to do the right thing when no one else will. And if you find yourself in a moment when you're not sure what to do or how to find beauty in the midst of the tragedy, then just ask God. Ask him. Be specific. And ask the one who has a much more informed perspective than you. But lastly this morning, as you ask, I challenge you to also ask others for help. Other people that you can trust that will help point you toward God's perspective. That's key, because sometimes we find ourselves asking other people that really we shouldn't be asking, you know, because their perspective is out of brokenness and wounding in their own, and that's what they all tend to focus on. And so we sometimes will go and gravitate toward people that just want to live in the same misery with us and want to bring us down into their own pit. And we've all experienced that before, but got to find people that want to help point us toward beauty. Because at times when you feel like you're drowning and you can't find anything beautiful or even the hope of anything beautiful, you need to understand that your own emotions don't allow you many times to see anything but gray. Your own emotions won't allow you to see anything but disappointment or anxiety. And sometimes you simply need to have the wisdom to ask somebody for help, to help you see things that you can't see in the moment. And one of the things that I've learned to understand about myself and I've learned to understand about other people is that when things start to spiral down, most of us here don't need someone to tell us new information. Now, at times we do need to hear a fresh information and a new idea and a new way of seeing things. But what most of us need is for someone to remind us of what is actually already true. Something that we know. Someone to remind us of what we know is beautiful. Someone to remind us of what we already know is the story that we want to be a part of. The story that we are a part of. We need people to remind us of what we already know is true. Where God continues to step into tragedies, regardless if they're tragedies that we've caused ourselves or regardless if they're tragedies that others have inflicted on us. Understand, God desires to step into all of it, and he promises. He promises to find a way to bring beauty out of it. But understand, our emotions in the moment can so easily blind us from seeing any possibility for hope, any possibility for beauty, any room for God to be God. And so we have to be willing to ask for help to see that which we can't see for ourselves. And again, understand, we've said this many times here. Asking for help is not a reflection of weakness. It's a reflection of wisdom. And it's a reflection of a willingness to fight to see what's beautiful or even what's potentially beautiful when we don't or when we can't see it ourselves. So we have to ask. You know, this message has kind of been bouncing around in my head all week long, and it's been good timing for me because it's been a rather challenging week where it just seems like there's been a lot of tragedy kind of going around in people's lives that I've spent time with, and you know, difficulties and challenges that have gone on even in our own life. And this one image that God has kept bringing back to mind was the moment that we find in the scriptures when Jesus resurrects from the dead and he appears to his followers, to his disciples. And when he appears to them, it says they're on his hands, they're on his wrists. Still were the scars that were left by the nail marks on the cross. And I found myself just kind of pondering that and tossing that around. And reflecting back on, you know, that if God was powerful enough to resurrect Jesus from the dead, then certainly he was powerful enough to remove the scars left by the nails. Certainly God could have done that. But perhaps there was a reason for leaving the scars. And that regardless of the original intent this week, for me, it became a very simple reminder that real life acknowledges both the scars and the beauty. And that more importantly, Jesus' resurrection from the dead, this very hinge point of our faith, that everything rests on that, reminds us that God steps into tragedy and brings beauty out of it. God steps into the worst tragedy imaginable, and he brings beauty out of it. That's who God is. It's what God does. That's the story that God invites us into. A story where God continually steps into death and brings out life. And so my hope is that all of us will be challenged to embrace that same story for our own. That we will let God's story wash over us and let it become our story. And that we would leave here today resolved and committed to find ways to courageously live out that kind of story. A story that partners with God and the world around us. So let's pray. Father, I don't take it for granted that on this weekend that our culture and our nation pauses to rest, to stop, to pause, that for many of us in here, this is the first opportunity that we've had to actually pause and to stop. And I'm fully aware that many of us bring in with us all sorts of hurt and pain and tragedy from our past. Many of us bring in the pain and the anxiety of tragedies and sorrow that we're dealing with in the present. And many of us are filled with anxiety and fear of tragedies that we are fearful will come. And so, Father, in the quietness and the stillness of the moment, would you remind us that you are a God who steps into death, that you are a God who steps into tragedy, and that you bring beauty and life out of it. Would you remind us that this is what you've done to our very lives, that you stepped into the brokenness of our own lives, and you are about resurrecting beauty and hope in us. And so, Father, may we be a people that pursue beauty. May we be a people that pursue hope. May we be a people that point others toward hope and toward beauty, that fight against the gravitational pull toward darkness and scandal, and that we would be a people that seek and fight and struggle to love and to build, to laugh, to dance, to find beauty. So, Father, would you give us new eyes to see? Would we look at the world with a fresh perspective? Would you give us new ears to hear and to listen to people around us, to what's actually going on? And may we find incredible, beautiful ways to love that shine the spotlight on you and the story that you invite all of us into. We thank you. And we continue to commit ourselves to you. In the name of the beautiful resurrected one, Jesus. Amen. Thanks, friends. We'll see you next week.